I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today on the podcast, I am excited to have Tracy Bianchi with me. And maybe that sounds like a throwaway phrase. Do I say excited every week with whoever is with me? Maybe I do. But I'm more excited today than usual. Tracy is a longtime friend, and actually she's one of the pastors at my church. And so I go way back with her. We were in a writer's group together and loosely still are, though we never meet, right? But anyway, so Tracy is with me. And just so you know, as I said, she's one of the pastors at church. Specifically, she serves as pastor for worship and I don't know your whole title. What is it?
I know, titles, right?
Yeah.
The official title, I believe, is Worship and Teaching Pastor.
Okay, thank you, because that's not what it says on the back of the book.
I used to pastor women,
yeah.
And so I've transitioned a little bit in the year since the book has come out.
I knew you had transitioned, and I started to read the back, and I'm like, oops,
that's
nope.
That's not her.
Not. Anyway, but the church is Christ Church of Oak Brook in Oak Brook, Illinois, and Tracy is an author of a variety of books, Mom Connection, Green Mama, and anything else? Well, this one, obviously, True You, Overcoming Self-Doubt and Using Your Voice, and you've co-authored this with Adele Calhoun. So I'm excited about this. I've never talked to you about what you've written in this book, but I just looked back at it. So it came out in 2015.
Yep.
I looked back and realized that I'd underlined a bunch of stuff at the beginning.
Wonderful.
I know.
That's very exciting.
I know. So I'm queen of reading a whole bunch of things at the beginning of books, because that's what happens often when you're interviewing people. You get the beginning read and you never get to finish the book. So today I picked it up and actually was looking further back in the book and read a couple of chapters further on, which was really nice. And one of the things that I love, I am a huge proponent of good questions at the end of chapters. Really good questions.
Excellent.
So I love that. And all that to say, it's a good small group book.
Yeah, that was our hope when we wrote it, is that women would gather together around it.
Well, and I can tell that it's a good small group book because of the questions, for one thing. Why this topic, overcoming self-doubt and using your voice?
Women, I think, it's a great question, are plagued with hesitation, with second-guessing themselves, with wondering, do I have anything to say? And when I say voice and having something to say, I don't always mean audible. You know, do I have a way of being in this world that matters? Do I have a statement to make with my life for the good of God and God's kingdom? And I think more than men, women struggle significantly to feel their value, their worth. There's so many reasons why, but the concept of voice is often elusive to women.
Well, and I think, I'm just thinking about it culturally. I think I agree. I think women struggle with it a lot more. And then you think about even our evangelical church culture. You know, you have a lot of churches. Probably 16 years, I think I've gone to Christ Church, been at a church that has women on the pastoral staff. And so I've always known that women have a voice in that sense there. But a lot of my growing up years, I attended churches where that wasn't the case. And so I think there are big questions even internally in the church, a big debate.
Absolutely.
You know this full well, and it's not nearly as easy for you, I'm sure, to find a job on a church staff as it is for your male counterparts, right?
Absolutely. When I was in seminary, they seemed to have the entire world before them, and the opportunities for women to serve in ministry leadership were less than half of what opportunities men had. And that's just one tiny context, you know. I mean, secular world, education, mm-hmm. So many places where women are just unsteady and unsure of their voice and their place.
Well, truth be told, so most people that listen to the podcast know I used to work in radio, and that job came to a close last fall, and then I had another job, and that came to a close recently as well. And it's, I look at the job ads and I'm thinking, okay, there's a cashier at Whole Foods. I could do that, maybe.
Kindergarten teacher, preschool teacher.
Right. And then, I start looking at church related jobs, ministry related jobs. And, you read that many are specifically for male leadership. And so, okay, where does that leave me?
Yeah.
So I'm doing the podcast, which I enjoy, but as folks listening know, they've heard me lament it doesn't pay anything. It's just fun. So, but I think it's really important to keep, one of the reasons I do it is because I think it's really important to continue raising topics that make us think. I am definitely a proponent for all people using their minds, but especially being an encourager to women to think about, to think deeper thoughts, to think beyond what color am I going to paint my walls, you know, what, and you having been in women's ministry before, before just being a teaching pastor and heading up worship at church, I mean, you know that these can be some places women can get stuck.
Yes. Well, and the marginalization, maybe we can, well, I don't know if I want to say marginalizing, but we've removed ourselves by choice sometimes, by so many conversations.
By ourselves, we've done it,
right? We, you know, and there are places where we've doubted, where we've wondered, where we've, and for other reasons outside of our control often, for cultural influences and family of origin and all this other stuff, we're removed from places of decision-making and power. And sometimes even when the opportunities are there for us to move out of those places, we get entrenched and we hang out there. And we end up, and again, having a life-giving paint color on your wall is not a bad thing.
Right.
But when all we do is have those conversations because we're told we don't belong in the workplace, or we, you know, choose to believe that myth, it's very limiting to our voices. And women find themselves going, the number of women who I've pastored, you don't have to work. Working isn't the answer to things. It's what am I doing with my life? And the number of women who are just so unfulfilled because they just have never trusted or believed that they are beyond painting the walls of their kitchen.
And I think there's that sense, and this isn't talked about all that much, I'm thinking from the pulpit. I have to think about that. But that idea of living life with purpose, and that doesn't matter whether you're male or female. I mean, living life with purpose, but it does seem to get bigger play with the male audience, or it's a given maybe. And I think it's hugely important. And when you talk about people feeling unfulfilled, back in your women's ministry days, how did you address that?
You know, I would always encourage women to ask themselves, well, what do you want to be about? What gives you life? What gives you passion? What do you feel like? You know, the reason why voice matters and your presence and owning your life matters is not just so you can show up somewhere and be like, well, I'm female and I'm here. It's because God created everything in you. There's one you in the world. There will only ever be one version of you. And there's something in you that you are uniquely designed to contribute to the world. And when we choose to avoid that or sidestep that or just play like we can't find it, the kingdom of God misses out on our contribution. Like God said, that's your thing. And if we can't find that and uncover the layers to get to that, we're missing a God opportunity. So I kind of approach it that way, because if it gets tied up in just vocation or just life stage, it can get lost in the, well, do women stay home or do they raise their kids? Or, you know, and it's not really ultimately about that.
It can
be a relationship with your neighbor that you were just meant to bring to life, you know?
And all of us don't get the privilege of living out vocationally our, that deeper sense of passion
exactly.
or purpose.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. So I think that's important to talk about that.
And none of us even get the blessing of being in a culture where we're afforded the opportunity for vocation.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I think about and hear you talk about peeling back the layers, I mean, I hear the title True You. And one of the things that I think about is that's a piece of this. I mean, you got to know what's at the center. You got to know what, you know, what it is. What is it that makes you plant your feet on the floor in the morning? Do you have that beyond the not so small things? But, you know, if you have children, you know, yes, you've got the things that you have to do or the job you have to do. But what is it that really lights your fire? And I mean, it takes some effort and energy and work to dig down.
Oh, absolutely. And it's peeling back the layers that hide what we might truly be, while at the same time embracing the complexities of wherever we find ourselves in our lives. So I might peel back the layers and say to myself, I think that I have been called to serve in Africa in a women's, I don't even know, some sort of ministry to women. And you know what? I'm just going to be straight up. I cannot move my entire family to Africa, you know, like my life stage, right? And I could, people do it all the time. I just don't feel that that's what our entire family is being called to. And so it's embracing the life stage I'm in too. You know, I mean, I meet so many women who just have babies sometimes. And they're like, I just got to go do something. I'm like, you've got a 2-week-old at home, sit on the couch and just enjoy what is, you know? So there's that, there's kind of both of those. It's embracing what is while also at the same time peeling back the things that keep you from discovering your true self.
Well, and I think sometimes we make it all about the thing, and the reality is, you know, we can stay planted where we are. I guess this wraps in with what you're just saying. And yeah, maybe down the road you can make that Africa trip or short-term visit or what, you know, whatever. But in the end, it's all about being more conformed to the image of Christ too. And that happens in a variety of ways. But a piece of that is moving forward toward who it is that he's created us to be. And it takes some, actually it takes some inner strength to start to go on that journey.
Oh, absolutely.
Right? It's one thing to wake up and to feel day after day and feel unfulfilled, but it takes some real inner energy to decide, okay, then I've got to figure this out. I've got to start walking with somebody that can help me move that direction, whether that's a spiritual director, whether that's going to counseling, whether, you know, fill in the blank. I don't know.
Well, it's terrifying because to understand who you are, you also have to understand what prevents you from being who you are. And sometimes that's just the things we do to ourselves. You know, we've made silly decisions, or we've overscheduled, or we've whatever. But then there's also all these tapes and narratives that replay in our heads that we've inherited, that we, you know, family of origin stuff, or a particular culture that you were born into, a time in history you were born into that says something to you that a generation 25 years later didn't hear.
Right.
You know, so how, and to begin to explore those things can be scary, especially when they deal with really the intricacies of immediate family and or past relationships that said things to us that, you know, weren't true. It's like, wow, that's hard work.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm thinking about the parenting journey, too. You and I are both married with children. Yours a whole lot younger than mine. But as you mentioned that piece, even where you're born in history, you know, it's one thing when we were born, the possibility of a female president of the United States really didn't exist at that point in time. Well, it's a different conversation with our children today.
Yeah.
And so you know, you've got to not only navigate your own stuff, but you've got to be nimble enough and able to navigate those kinds of conversations even with your children as well.
Oh, and the things they see and experience and take for granted, and you're in a good way too. I think there have been so many advances for women, but yet, my daughter's 8, and she will look at, you know, just because whether, you know, a female president happens or not, just there's a girl's name on a ticket.
That
not possible before she was born.
Yeah, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
And we can say the same thing about race, obviously.
Yeah,
that happened in our lifetime as
of
well.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so one of the things that you do, you know, we talked already about the underlying piece in the book True You is overcoming self-doubt and using your voice. You know, you break it up into parts: true relationships, true life, true influence. And I'd like us to maybe camp out on a part that you like especially.
You know, relationships are huge. The true relationship section, and you know I think it's Marshall McLuhan. The medium is the message.
Yeah,
and that's why we co-authored the book. We Adele and I realized, you know, women. We both served together on staff at the same church. You know, I know Anita, you know Adele. And we realized women seem to default to collaboration in a way that men often don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting because I had a female, all-female,
yes,
largely female team that did this radio show. And so very similar, you know, flat model of leadership and very collaborative.
Hugely collaborative. Yeah. And at first we were like, well, why would one woman write a book for a bunch of women, right? Let's get a bunch, you know, and we talked to friends and we sent emails out asking for stories and all this other sort of feedback. But we realized that women are better when they can rely and lean on one another. And we thought, why don't we do this book together? And so that concept of relationships is, and I mean, who you are, who your gal pal is, and in a very heartbreaking way, whether or not you have one, which so many women don't. Isolation and loneliness is such a pandemic for women.
Yeah.
relationships are so significant.
Which is, largely today, I mean, I speak about a few other things, but I speak a lot about relationships and how to form them, how to go deeper, because it's kind of shocking to me. Of course, we tend to speak out of our own wounds too. I mean, that's been something that I've lived through and lived out, I guess. But the realization that so many women don't even know how to go about forming relationships is shocking. And my husband, Mike, uses this phrase, which I love, or their people picker is broken, you know?
Their people picker. Yeah. That's great.
Right? And that, again, can stem back to things that you already mentioned. Life circumstances, but I think a lot of times our family of origin. I did not see relationships, good close relationships, modeled in my family of origin for a lot of reasons. But it wasn't modeled for me. So I had to figure it out for myself, and probably didn't until I was about 40. And then I realized the deep value of close female friendships, but I didn't see it or get it before then because of that particular circumstance in my life. It was family of origin related.
Oh, yeah. Well, and culturally, you know, I mean, quote unquote, good TV, right? let's put 30 women in a house and have them fight over a man.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, women fighting against other women and competing, those make for good ratings. That makes for good TV. And, you know, some of the iconic friendships are, you know, I think of, you know, Gail and Oprah, right? I mean, that's one of the iconic friendships. Mm-hmm. But then if you flip on, and I'm not going to bag on Disney necessarily, but how many of the princesses other than Frozen had best friends that were humans, right?
Okay.
Yeah. They're friends with fish and lizards, or they're alone, they're locked in towers. They're, you know,
right.
Think of our fairy tale narratives, and it's like, well, where are young girls getting these strong examples of what it looks like to be fierce, loyal friends? It's just not out there.
Right. They get the picture of solo women.
Yes. I can do it. I got it. Wow. I got it.
That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And I think maybe we've been so caught up in trying to put out there in front of us those strong female figures that we've not thought about female friendship. And actually, I had a publisher talk to me about that and ask me about writing about the power of close-knit friendships because of what she had watched modeled in and through Midday Connection.
Well, I mean...
I hadn't even thought of it.
So powerful. I mean, that you modeled something there that culturally... I mean, think about... And again, we love Harry Potter at our house.
Oh, we do too.
But Hermione Granger.
Yes.
Her best friends are all the boys.
Yeah.
Where's her girl?
You're right.
Where's her girl?
Yeah.
Not to say we couldn't be friends
with
men.
Maybe Ron's sister.
Yeah.
You know,
That's true.
Ron Weasley's sister.
Yeah.
What's her name?
I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean...
But really, it's the boys.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And I think a lot of times we're left in the workplace. We're often outnumbered in the workplace too. And so that is a part of reality, learning how to navigate that world, the male world, and do it well. And maybe that's even what breeds some of the competition versus, you know, really being a comrade in
that
place.
We live out of a scarcity narrative at work. Mm. It's okay, well, there's only certain number, you know, there's only one token woman in every organization, and if you're here, then am I her? You know, like, what do we do?
how do we turn that around? How do we change that? How do you talk to women about being strong, deep friends? How do we go there?
You know, and unfortunately for a lot of us, we come later in life to some of these conversations, but I think the conversation remains. Like, I'm already having conversations with my daughter about just the value of loyalty. I mean, these are the friendship concepts we try to teach, you know, in schools or whatever, but, you know, how do you treat your female friendships?
Well, this thought just popped into my head. So I have said this on more than one occasion. So what does this say? So I had child one, a boy, and I have said so many times, oh, I'm glad I had a boy. I think girls are harder.
Yeah.
To raise,
yes.
Meaning that. And often female friends who've had a daughter will say, yeah, I think you're right.
Oh, yeah.
And which I feel bad saying that, but so.
Well, we have to start a prize. You know, so I have a friend who's was on staff for almost 2 decades at a giant, huge public high school. She said, hands down, the drama with the girls and their vitriol toward one another and
so
their
what
ability.
Moms teaching our so is it yes. moms what are
and
what
she
we
said
are
there are times she was culturally we learn these things she was there are women who've never learned these lessons and they're raising girls who are at each right. other's throats and they're coached at home well you know don't let her get this or that. That doesn't happen obviously in every situation, but there has to be some shift in the narrative that you know get your girlfriends back like in a good way, not get them back.
yeah
But yeah.
Well, I mean, and I think we can learn. Females, we need to learn from, I think of, and I often use this movie actually as an example when I'm talking about Friends. I think of Lord of the Rings. I think of, you know, Frodo setting out on this quest and who goes with him. Not a multitude, but some select friends go with him specifically to walk with him, watch his back, and to fight off the enemy. And so, but again, we're seeing it in a male context there, but we've got to take some of those examples because there probably are more male cultural examples for us. We've got to take that and own that as women.
Absolutely.
And that can and should be our narrative as well.
Well, we have to be willing to admit that isolation and the can-do spirit, because in the last 50 years, women have mm-hmm. exerted themselves and say, no, I got this. But we've almost overcorrected where we feel like we have to have it alone. And so it's like, how do we get to places where we can walk up to people that we maybe only know sort of and just be like, look, I'm just colossally lonely. And I do want to hang out and risk that the answer to that may be no. But
yeah,
you just got to risk
and
it.
And I tell women that all the time, that you're going to have to risk. It's a lot harder for the introvert than the extrovert.
Indeed.
But if the answer is no, because sometimes those people that we're drawn toward tend to be people that probably do have a multitude of relationships, because that's part of what we're seeing in them as good health, you know?
Yeah.
They're healthy and have healthy relationships. So if they're unable, don't lose heart and lose hope. Keep asking. Find the next person. And I always tell women, too, because aren't we good at judging a book by its cover? And we shouldn't be doing, you know? It's so easy for us to walk into a room and go, oh, what a cute outfit. I think I could be friends with her.
Yes.
You know, and not really seeing the whole person and hearing someone's story and realizing, oh, wow, how cool are they? And boy, did I misjudge them.
Yeah. And behind the veneer and the outfit or the car or the appearance, there's mm-hmm. there's this rich, thick story.
Yes.
We profile each other.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah. We profile each other. I like that. I mean, I don't like that, but you know.
But it happens.
It happens all the time. And we can't give up. We can't profile each other. How else can we move forward in developing some of those better relationships or not being in that competitive place?
Yeah, you know, and I do think part of it is, and I wish I could remember which old historic dude said this, but that saying, and I know you'll know it when I say it, be kind, for everyone you meet is facing a great battle.
Yes.
So how do we live in a way that our knee-jerk response to people isn't, how could she do that or he do that, right? Why didn't they, or how dare they, or this expectation that people step up in a certain way, or that moment that you encounter them that they seemed less than kind to you might have been because the night before they got the most tragic news of their life.
Right.
You know, how do we live with grace towards each other and believe the best about each other? And I think we're coached culturally. There's so much anger in our culture right now that we're just coached to think the worst and everybody's out to get each other or get me. And it's, man, how do I just extend some grace and realize you probably have a massive world you're living in that I know nothing about. So the fact that you just cut me off in traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to think the best.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Melinda, my good friend, who has recently posted a couple or several times on Facebook, you know what? Don't say anything until you've walked a mile in someone else's
yes,
shoes. It's
yes.
the same, that same sentiment.
I followed a little bit of that. She's said some wise things
yes.
on that.
You know, and what does that mean? What does that look like? How can, if we can't literally walk a mile in someone's shoes, you know, how best can we try and put ourselves in their place and think through what life might just be like for them before we open our rather large mouth, you know? It's easy to open open our mouths before thinking.
Oh yeah. And even if we can't walk in somebody's shoes, can I at least walk next to you?
Yes.
Can I at least
yes.
see your shoes?
Yes.
So I understand what you're walking in.
Yes.
And, you know, social media and our, yeah. Our electronic culture, you know, I mean, sometimes it's simple things like give yourself an hour or a day
before
or a week
responding.
Before you respond to something that
why,
it ticks you off.
What a good idea.
It's like shocker, you
especially
know?
Right now in this political climate.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
You know,
it's
rough.
It's tragic.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, we've just loosely touched on the whole finding your voice. We're talking a little bit more about relationships. What's a good place to kind of wrap up our thoughts on this?
You know, there is a story in scripture that Adele and I just kept coming back to, and I'll be brief on it. It's that story at the beginning of the life of Moses. And you think the story starts with Moses. But the story starts with, I think it's five women who conspire against evil and injustice together to let the life of Moses come forward. There are these Hebrew midwives who are issued an edict from the Pharaoh to drown the boys when they're born. And they choose to, if you read the scripture, they're like, they tell the Pharaoh, we don't even know what to do. These ladies just have birth so fast, we can't stop it.
Mm.
There's Pharaoh's daughter who knows darn well what she's doing. There's Moses' mother who knows she cannot raise that child. You know, and there's this network of women. They risk, every single one of them risks their lives. Then there's his mom who goes and is, I'll raise that
right.
baby. I mean, what a risk. But they knew there was something in them they were supposed to do or be for the good of the kingdom, and they risked it. And stories like that motivate me, and I think, man, if we can get beyond the petty, narcissistic, individualistic tendencies and see our linking with each other and our use of our voices as part of the common good.
Mm.
I don't know. I'm probably talking in circles here, but there's powerful stories there of women who've done remarkable things. And you know what? The midwives, you know, we don't walk around saying their name. We say Moses' name, and that's
right.
okay. We don't need, God's point was that we would know Moses. And there's a reason for that, but it's okay to, it's just,
I
it's
love
powerful
that.
Stuff.
That, well, it is powerful.
Yeah.
And so maybe a question to leave us with is, how might we enter into that culture, that climate, and join together and truly be midwives and birth something
yeah.
new?
It's a great question. I think we see our labors as part of a bigger narrative. You know, it's always God's story. It's God's use of us. You know, Shipra and Pua were the names of those midwives. And if we were supposed to know their names, we would know them because that's what God wanted. But they had a role to play in his kingdom, and they did what needed to get done, and they stepped in and they risked, and we just got to see ourselves as purveyors of that same story. The story didn't stop.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
thank
we're
you.
Still part of this God story.
Yeah.
So what are we supposed to do, whether we're named or not, whether we're known or not? We are part of something much bigger, connected to women all throughout history and women yet to come.
Step up, step in.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. it. Step up, step in.
Yeah. Tracy Bianchi, thanks. Thanks for being with me. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.